Good morning. On today's programme, we look at how a hospital in Jerusalem has become a temporary home for Gazans who are receiving life-saving treatment. We'll also be hearing about how UK universities are facing financial issues, as the country's migration policy has led to a sharp drop in enrolments from international students. But first, we go to Nigeria, where there are major concerns over the rising cost of living, as fuel prices skyrocket and the currency weakens. Unemployment and poverty levels are increasing, and there is huge pressure on the government from workers who are fighting for better wages. Strike actions have seen electricity shut down, airports closed, offices locked up, while schools and banks have also been affected. Here is Paloum David reporting from Abuja.
May 29th, 2024, made it 1 year since Bola Tinubu became Nigeria's president. It has been a roller coaster ride for Nigerians, especially because of his economic policies, like the removal of the fuel subsidy. The cost of fuel per litre rose from 187 naira to around 800 naira. This, of course, led to an increase in the price of transportation and food. According to the World Bank, this heightened poverty in the country, which stood at 46% in 2023. His supporters argue that the fuel subsidy money which has now been saved will be directed at the nation's development rather than lining the pockets of political elites. However, critics argue that they are yet to see tangible developments resulting from the saved funds. Another major economic policy that Nigerians are crying about is the floating of the currency, the Naira. This policy allows market forces to determine its value. At some point, $1 was exchanged for almost 2,000 naira. This has affected the cost of importation of goods for businesses. The purchasing power of Nigerians has reduced drastically as businesses now complain of little or no patronage. Insecurity, unemployment, increased poverty level, inflation, and cost of living are also on the rise. The inflation rate rose from 22% in May 2023 to almost 40% this year. This is part of the reasons why Nigerian workers are demanding a salary increase from their monthly 30,000 naira, which is about $20 wage, to $165. The labor unions say the current minimum wage of $20 can no longer cater to the well-being of an average Nigerian worker. The workers gave the president a May 31st deadline to raise their wages or face a strike action. When the deadline elapsed, labor unions stopped work across the country, grounding all economic activities. Electricity was shut down, airports were closed, schools, banks, and offices were all shut down. The government got the stern message and pleaded with the labor unions to suspend the strike while negotiations were still ongoing. Labor agreed. The government is now offering the workers $42, but the workers are insisting on $165. The margin is still very wide. Another reason why Nigerian workers are angry is because President Tinubu tripled the electricity tariff amidst the high cost of living. However, on Wednesday, June 12, 2024, during the ceremony marking 25 years of uninterrupted democracy in Nigeria, President Tinubu said Nigeria's economy has been in desperate need of reform for decades. He said it has been unbalanced because it was built on the flawed foundation of over-reliance on revenues from the exploitation of oil, which Nigeria, of course, has in abundance. He also agreed that his reforms has brought hardship to the citizens, but he insists that it is required to fix the economy over the long run. The president said the government has negotiated in good faith and with open arms with labor unions on a new national minimum wage and will soon send an executive bill to the legislature to enshrine what has been agreed upon as part of Nigeria's law for the next 5 years or less. These statements riled up the leadership of the labor unions, who quickly issued a press statement announcing that no agreement has yet been reached on the national minimum wage negotiation. Workers say they won't accept any minimum wage that equates to a starvation wage. They say they cannot continue to work, yet live in abject poverty. The vice president of the Nigeria Labour Union, Adewale Adeyanju, raised concerns about intimidation and harassment from government operatives during the minimum wage negotiation process. He said fully armed soldiers surrounded them during negotiations. Meanwhile, as President Tinubu was delivering speeches on Nigeria's democracy on June 12, there were protests in other parts of Nigeria. Frustrated Nigerians hit the streets demanding good governance and a turnaround of the country's economic situation. But President Tinubu says as he continues to reform the economy, he shall always listen to the people and will never turn his back on them. Nigerians are hoping he indeed listens to them and eases the cost of living. For World Report in Abuja, Nigeria, I am Palum David.
And now we go to Jerusalem, where the Augusta Victoria Hospital has historically welcomed the sickest Palestinians from the occupied West Bank and Gaza. There were over 40 Gazan patients receiving life-saving treatment there when Hamas attacked and killed over 1,000 Israeli civilians on October 7th. Since then, Israel has been bombarding Gaza, where it is estimated that over 37,000 people have been killed. For Gazans who are being treated at the hospital, there is no longer a safe place to go home to, as Caitlin Kelly reports.
The Augusta Victoria Hospital sits on the Mount of Olives. Its famous tower stands tall above Jerusalem. There's a calmness in this place of healing, high above the tensions of the ancient city below. Inside, I meet Amira, a 12-year-old girl from Remel, Gaza. Her life has been anything but calm over the past few months. Last year, Amira was diagnosed with a brain tumour. In need of specialised treatment, including aggressive radiotherapy, she left Gaza with her mother, Iman, in September to come to Jerusalem. My uncle brought toy clowns to the hospital to make me feel better, she says, tears falling down her cheeks as she remembers her last day in Gaza. Leaving in an ambulance, she waved goodbye to her family, thinking it would be just for a few weeks. 8 months later, Amira still hasn't been able to go home. The Augusta Victoria Hospital, operated by the Lutheran World Federation, was established to care for Palestinian refugees after the 1948 conflict, in collaboration with the UN. It's one of the few hospitals that have historically welcomed sick Palestinians who lack access to advanced medical care in the West Bank and Gaza. Arriving for life-saving treatment, Amira describes feeling disorientated and scared to be in a new place. Then, on October 7th, life changed again. Amira has since watched images of her hometown under bombardment. Initially, she said she didn't want to continue her treatment but to return to Gaza to see her father and her sister. She speaks at length about her little six-year-old sibling, Mira, a troublemaker who she misses dearly. I just want to see my father and my sister, she says. It's indescribable. We are always in pain. Sometimes I cry out of nowhere, says Iman, her mother, whose youngest daughter now won't speak to her over the phone when they make it through the patchy communications. For the 48 patients from Gaza, in addition to medical procedures and the psychological distress of the war, there is a third threat. Earlier this year, the Israeli Defense Ministry urged hospital officials to discharge patients fit to return to Gaza amidst the ongoing fighting. Their illness was the condition for their travel permit outside the enclave. At the last minute, the Israeli Supreme Court suspended this order, thanks to a petition by the NGO Physicians for Human Rights. The threat of return to Gaza hangs over many patients, as the court is still expected to deliver a final ruling. Amira is still undergoing treatment, including regular physiotherapy for the motor skills on her left side, affected by her brain tumour. This keeps her safe from being sent back to Gaza, but her movement remains restricted to the hospital and the adjacent hotel. We sit on the green grass outside, Amira's only outdoor space. Even the park visible from her hotel window is off limits. Despite everything, Amira has a spring in her step. Physiotherapy now means she can walk without a wheelchair. Although her limp and sullen jaw hinder her laughter fills the sunlit corridors. Iman says the hospital has become like family. They've made new Palestinian friends, an anomaly for Gazans who rarely meet Jerusalemites or those from the West Bank. Amira's nurse, Mohammed Kabaja, is one of her favourites. Seeing her walk every day makes me so happy, he says, recalling her initial unstable condition. At least 22 patients from Gaza need urgent cancer treatment at this hospital. Working at the hospital since 1999, Mohammed has seen multiple escalations of violence, but patients were only ever stuck in Jerusalem for a max of 2 months before now, he says. He describes how they've had to adapt their programming for long-term care, considering both physical and mental health.
The companions also need support. Their minds are on the Gaza situation and news from home, said Nurse Mohammed. Iman starts to cry as she describes the agony of the situation. But her tears soon turn to laughter. Joined by Amira, she says, "We are going crazy. We never know if we are laughing or crying." Although Amira's physical future is now brighter, so much else is uncertain. Iman is conflicted, torn between Amira's needs and her six-year-old at home. For Amira, returning to Gaza isn't an option, as there is no treatment available there for her. The only cancer treatment hospital in the Strip shut down on November 1st due to fuel shortages.
Now there are no fully functioning hospitals in the enclave.
So Amira and her mother wait. They wait for the fighting to end, for Amira's treatment to finish, or to be reunited with their family. It's unclear which will come first. "I want to swim in the sea," says Amira, mimicking Frank Coral. "Everything beautiful is now gone," she says. "Except for the sea. That's still there. But it might be some time before Amira can look out on that horizon again." This is Caitlin Kelly for World Report from Jerusalem.
Every year, hundreds of thousands of international students study at universities in the UK, providing a steady income for educational institutions. But tighter restrictions on migration have led to a big drop in the number of foreign students registering for postgraduate studies this coming September. And that decline is putting some British universities at risk of closure, and it's a major worry for the country's academic sector, as Russell Padmore reports from London.
The UK's policies of migration were already a political battleground before a general election was called for July. The controversial plan to send illegal migrants to Rwanda has divided politicians. But efforts to curb migration have also put colleges and universities under scrutiny, following reports of foreign students abusing the system of getting a visa and permission to work, but not actually studying. Since January, people from other countries studying here are no longer allowed to bring family members. There is an exception for postgraduate research. An independent committee on migration, which advises the government, has reported that restrictions on education visas for international students has led to a drop of 63% in foreign students registered for postgraduate study in September. The Migration Advisory Committee has also warned additional restrictions on visas, which allow foreign students to work in Britain for 2 years after graduation, would lead to job losses, courses being closed, and create a risk of some institutions failing. Business leaders say foreign students boost innovation, which is important for the economy. If the Labour Party wins the election, as most experts predict, then the committee will be reformed. Labour's policy is to link it to other bodies and follow Australia's approach of encouraging its domestic workforce to develop skills which are in short supply. That would have an impact on efforts to attract students from around the world. In 2022, almost 680,000 international students were studying here. 120,000 were from the European Union, including Irish students. But overall, about a quarter were Chinese, alongside large groups from India and Nigeria. International students have become more important for universities because tuition fees for British undergraduates have been frozen. Academic institutions are losing an average of £2,500 for each UK citizen they have attending, about €3,000. But international students pay up to four times as much, a vital source of revenue. Rising costs have forced some universities to consider cutting the number of UK students. But then they risk having too many international ones, which would change the nature of a British institution. The clampdown on migration, which is causing a big drop in people coming here to study, comes at a worrying time for British academia. The University of York recently reported a financial deficit of £24 million. That's about €28 million, warning that inflation and other challenges have put its funding at risk. Coventry University needs to make cuts of £95 million in the next 2 years. That's about €111 million. The institution warned the UK government's response to issues around migration and the economy has had an impact on recruitment of international students. These challenges for British universities, though, could benefit their Irish counterparts. 30,000 international students are studying in Ireland, according to the Irish Universities Association, which says many return to study masters or PhDs, which makes them attractive employees for the multinational companies which support the economy. Universities like Oxford and Cambridge are a form of soft power for Britain's efforts to maintain global influence. Dozens of world leaders have studied in the UK, and not just at those institutions. Efforts to clamp down on illegal migration, which are blamed for a fall of 63% in international students, those registered for postgraduate studies in September, threaten to undermine that informal system of soft power. Controlling migration is a thorny subject for politicians knocking on doors, canvassing voters for their support in the general election in July. Tighter restrictions on visas for education are a deterrent to international students, and the loss of so many from abroad is undermining revenues for universities, which could force some to close. The academic world is also worried because many international students do important postgraduate research, which leads to significant advances in medicine or technology. This is Russell Padmore for World Report in London.
That's it from World Report today. If you want to listen back, you can find the show on rte.ie/worldreport or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back at the same time next week. So from myself, Gavin O'Callaghan, and all of the team, have a good weekend and take care.